The long drive to the main Tyrande garrison was uneventful, confirming the impression I'd already formed of a safe haven comfortably under Imperial control. Though the windows of Colonel Vall's staff car were of armor, Chris, the finely mustachioed Vostroyan had lost no time in lowering them, so clearly had little fear of running into an ambush along the way, or, more likely, felt that the risk of assassination was an acceptable one if the alternative was remaining in an enclosed space with Jürgen. I'd got pretty used to my aide's aroma over the years, but even I was grateful for the current of warm air sluicing through the passenger compartment.
This is the area in question.
Vall handed me a map slate. We were on a coastal road by now, heading away from the city spires towards a headland in the distance. If I narrowed my eyes enough against the glare of the shimmering waves, I could just make out a wharf surrounded by fencing and a cluster of the prefabricated HAB units common to guard outposts throughout the galaxy.
The red icons indicate confirmed sightings.
They're pretty scattered. And the rest?
Orange are probable, blue uncorroborated. Normally, our analysts would be able to narrow down the most likely location of their base to a fairly small area, but the terrain here being what it is...
Quite.
The icons were spread across a dozen islands and islets, separated by narrow channels and wide expanses of blue water.
They must be getting around by boat, which means they could have set off from anywhere. What we need one too, sir?
I have arranged for one of our patrol boats to be put at your disposal.
Vall said, to Jürgen's visible relief. My aide and aircraft were not a happy combination, and best kept apart whenever possible.
I trust that will be satisfactory.
Perfectly.
By this time, we were approaching a chain-link fence. Uniformed troopers scurrying around beyond it, carrying ammo boxes, rations, and medipacks towards the wharf I'd glimpsed from the highway. The huddle of buildings cut off my view of the vessel anchored there, but at least it seemed we'd be well supplied once we'd boarded her. The Colonel's car was evidently known well enough for the sentries on the gate to pass it through with a minimum of delay. And a few minutes later, we rolled to a stop alongside the boat, which was to be both our transport and our protection for the duration of the trip. Neither Jürgen nor I were particularly familiar with watercraft. The closest thing to them in the underhive I grew up in were the crude rafts which the bolder tunnel runners occasionally used to get across the wider sump flows. While a boat would be no use to a Valhallan, water on my aide's homeworld existing naturally only as a solid. The vessel seemed reassuringly buoyant, however, solid as a chimera, though around three times as large. Her gunwales were armored, as was the blocky wheelhouse standing proud of the deck, and heavy bolters were mounted fore and aft, where they could be brought to bear on a threat from any direction.
This isn't the same kind of boat your missing troopers were in, is it?
I asked, mindful that it had apparently been found drifting and half sunk. If it was the same type, the rebels would have had to have got their hands on something a lot more lethal than a handful of looted lasguns. Vall shook his head as we climbed out of the car, and the odor of brine, promethium, and rotting fish displaced Jürgen's earthier aroma.
Of course not. This is one of our coastal patrol boats. Rom's squad were in one of those.
He pointed to a much smaller boat, unarmed, and barely large enough to seat a dozen men, bobbing at the end of its mooring line further down the wharf. I found myself thinking of the downhive rafts again, although this looked a great deal less like a lethal accident waiting for someone to happen to.
Shallow draft, so it can get through the narrower channels between the islands.
Flat bottom, too.
I glanced down at the deck of the armored patrol boat to meet the eyes of a younger Vostroyan officer, looking up at us in an appraising manner.
Lets you hit the beach faster in an amphibious assault.
I'll take your word for it.
His uniform was the usual strident red favored by Vostroyan regiments, which stood out oddly against the sober gray of the vessel he stood on. And his moustache had been waxed to stand at a jaunty 10-2. He snapped a salute, which the colonel and I returned, while Jürgen faded into the background as much as possible for a man whose presence was always obvious, even when he was out of sight.
Commissar, this is Lieutenant Dahn, captain of the 109.
I belatedly noticed the identifying number stenciled on the stern of the blocky vessel.
Do I call you captain or lieutenant?
Dan smiled, no doubt used to the question.
Whichever you prefer. But the crew sticks to skipper. Saves confusing the rank with the job.
Then skipper it is.
I jumped down from the wharf, with a faint clatter of boot soles against the deck plates. The sensation of motion underfoot as I regained my balance was a little disconcerting, but I'd experienced far worse in my time, and was able to ignore it after a while. Now we were on the same level. Dan turned out to be a little shorter than me, although his stocky build probably gave him the edge in weight. The skin of his face had been reddened by years of exposure to the elements, but it still had some way to go before it became a match for his crimson topcoat.
"Welcome aboard,"
he said, and extended a hand, which I shook with the appropriate degree of formality, before taking an adroit step to the side just in time to avoid getting brained by my kit bag, which thudded to the deck a hair's breadth from where I'd been standing.
"Sorry, sir. Wanted to make sure it didn't go over the side."
A moment later, he joined us, cushioning the shock of his landing by flexing his knees and planting a foot among my personal effects. Trying not to wonder what had made the faint cracking noise and hoping it wasn't my flask of Locris's best Amasek, I introduced him to the skipper. Dan returned his salute promptly enough, but to my distinct lack of surprise, didn't offer to shake hands with him.
"If you'll point me to the Commissar's quarters, I'll get these stowed."
"I'm afraid you'll have to bunk down with the rest of us, Commissar. We're not really set up for visitors."
"Of course."
The patrol boat was clearly intended as little more than a floating weapons platform, with only minimal concessions to the comfort of its crew. It seems that they slept in hammocks below deck in the forward two-thirds of the vessel, the rest being occupied by its engine and fuel tanks. These were capacious enough to sustain the 109 on an extended patrol, although a number of barrels of promethium were lashed to the deck in case of emergencies.
"We can always lay out the bedrolls up here if necessary."
"That might be best,"
Dan said, with barely concealed relief, no doubt imagining trying to sleep with Jürgen in close proximity. He beckoned to one of the deckhands.
"Gorvan, make room on the foredeck for the Commissar and his aide."
"Right to our skip,"
Gorvan said, with a rough approximation of a salute, and ambled away, Jürgen following. No doubt aware of the Commissariat's position on matters of protocol and discipline, Dan looked at me with a flicker of apprehension.
"You'll find us a little less formal than a line regiment. I hope you don't consider that a problem."
"Not in the least."
"We operate independently most of the time. The rule book doesn't help much when you're facing a fast, mobile enemy."
I looked at him appraisingly.
"I'm sure you wouldn't let the reins get slack enough for anyone to undermine your authority."
He might have been able to reply to that, but his expression suddenly hardened, his gaze shifting past my shoulder to something on the wharf. I turned to find Colonel Vall watching us, an oddly dressed trooper at his side, the first Vostroyan I'd seen without extravagant facial hair. A second later, the coin dropped.
"Who's he?"
"His name is Kalen,"
the man said, dropping to the deck without a sound. He straightened up, fixing me with a glare that would melt ceramite.
"And he's got ears and a tongue in his head."
"Caiaphas Kane,"
I said, nodding a formal greeting.
"Who apologizes for his lack of courtesy."
I still didn't have a clue what he was doing here, but I thought it wouldn't hurt to be polite. Vall clearly thought his presence was a good idea, even if Dan equally clearly didn't. So I resolved to withhold judgment until I had a better idea of what was going on. Kalen's expression softened a little.
"All right, then,"
he said grudgingly, after sifting my words for signs of sarcasm. He barely came up to my shoulder, the red Vostroyan topcoat too big for his relatively slight frame. A long-bladed knife was scabbarded at his hip, and he carried a lasgun slung across his back. Altogether, I've seldom seen such an incongruous figure on an Imperial guard post, even taking my decades of service with Jürgen into account.
"Galen's one of our local scouts. He knows the channels and currents in the area better than anyone, and he can find his way across most of the islands, too."
I glanced at the man again, but he seemed happy enough to have Vall speaking for him on this occasion. Probably because he was being complimentary, although, as it turned out, the praise was well merited.
"Then it seems we are fortunate to have you with us,"
I told him, earning a reluctant and swiftly suppressed smile.
"I'm glad you think so,"
Dan said, while the Colonel pottered back to his air-conditioned car, and the oddly attired barbarian wandered off without another word to sit cross-legged in the bow.
I take it you don't,
I said, once I was sure he was out of earshot.
He's an Indige, one of the natives of this world.
The Colonel seems to trust him.
So did Rum.
He was a guide for the patrol that disappeared.
Not on their last trip, obviously, but he'd been out with them a few times, showing them the channels and the sandbanks. He knew their movements, is all I'm saying.
That doesn't mean he sold them out to the insurgents.
It doesn't mean he didn't, either. Lots of the Indige are on our side, but they're archipelagans first, however much they pray to the Emperor these days.
He looked at me sideways, as though expecting me to launch into a little homily about how we're all servants of the Emperor and equally deserving of his protection. But I'm a commissar, not a chaplain. Besides, I'd learned to trust my own paranoia a long time ago, so I could hardly begrudge him his.
It's your boat. If you really don't want him here, I can always overrule the Colonel.
Not that I had the slightest intention of doing so, of course, but I was sure I'd read the man well enough to know that he'd refuse. Duty is everything to a firstborn. Going against the orders of a superior officer, even with a commissar to back him up, would be tantamount to spitting on the Aquila, so far as he was concerned. I watched him struggle with the unexpected dilemma for a moment, before shaking his head, as I'd expected.
We'll make better time with his help,
he conceded, with a final dubious glance in the direction of the man's oblivious back. He turned away towards the wheelhouse.
You don't get seasick, I hope.